This is Mae Brussel, and it's side two of broadcast number 667, September 17th, 1984. I'm going to spend more time in the next few weeks on the decision, the meeting of the Pentagon, on what news media can cover the next war. They had a few months to analyze the Grenada invasion, and they have set statement or plans for what we can know and who knows it, and they're ready for action. And media, the choice of information is the way you live or die. You can't put down what they said or how they wormed their way into controlling everything we think, which is the Brave New World, which is the Gestapo, which is the Fourth Reich. But getting back to the September 9th Los Angeles Times article, which is important, let me quickly say again that the president, the issue of the president deciding the nuclear war was explained by no less than the general counsel of the Defense Department, who said that with or without any declaration of war, the president has the right to use even strategic nuclear weapons, and that NATO has decided it would be a hindrance, that there would be probable adverse effect on NATO deterrence if Congress voted whether or not to have war. Now, the president of NATO is Lord Peter Carrington, the business partner of Kissinger Associates, Kissinger the protege of Herr Fritz Kramer, from the Habsburgs, IG Farben from Germany. So every point goes back and every connecting decision goes back to the Reich. I'm not using a figure of speech. Now, Mr. Stone in the LA Times said, in a situation in which there is time to involve others, it is morally indefensible to have the president take an action by himself that may lead within 24 hours through escalation to the death of a billion people and a planet permanently scarred. No one decision maker should be asked or allowed to take such an awesome decision on his own. We have in our society checks and balances galore on the taking of a single life if time permits, as it would in this case, in where were the checks if you took a million or a billion lives. The founding fathers understood quite well that the president was not our king, that he was not putting the nation at risk by himself as if it were his kingdom. Now, the problem with Mr. Stone's thinking is such that he has not taken into account the role of Reinhard Gehlen when Hitler's intelligence came over and informed our CIA. As I've said before, the checks and balances that belonged to the Constitution went. The executive, the legislative, the judicial. I've mentioned this over and over again. Those were the balances. When you make a National Security Council, a group of Germans and Poles and Romanians with thick German accents, and some change their names and some keep them, and some are easily identifiable and some are not, they decide national security. Those deposed, revanchist people, those emigres, have come here and made the decision, we will tell you, America, we will revenge our defeat, we will take them, and, you know, better dead than red. They are avowed churchgoers. This is a holy crusade. Who is the Defense Department attorney? Let's investigate that. I'll do some correspondence and find out who the general counsel is, his name. And I'll bet you'll find a Russian, a Pole, or a German behind that cloak. Mr. Stone is waking up, or hasn't awakened, like Rip Van Winkle, to see what's going on. He thinks the Founding Fathers said we can't have a king. The Founding Fathers said we can't have Henry Kissinger, and you still may have him as President of the United States. He makes every foreign policy and ruins every country we touch. Now to get on to almost the point of last week's shock, and then what followed after that this week. These are some of the stories that preceded what I heard on the Today Show, and maybe you heard it or maybe you didn't. Now, one day before September the 9th, Mr. Mondale was speaking to a group of veterans in Portland, Oregon, and the headline was, Mondale says there will be no veterans of World War III. Now, Mondale leaves me absolutely cold, uninterested. I will vote against Reagan. When you read this thing, it doesn't mean a thing. When he warned the American Legion, and he went there in Salt Lake City also, that there won't be any more of you after the last war. It sounds like a figure of speech. As I say, the newspaper doesn't say it all, but The Washington Times, again, the Reverend Moon paper, is the only paper that carried the story that I saw. Maybe you saw it if you did send me the stories. It said, Soviets speak on the last war, and that is where the Soviet First Deputy Foreign Minister, Georgi Kornienko, spoke on the program, saying that there would not be any other war, that this was it. If we were crazy enough to do this, this was it. Now, that was last Monday that I heard him in the morning, and I mentioned it on the tape and the broadcast I did for you, number 666. Now, the very next morning, the sun comes up, and here is the story which follows. Reagan and Gromyko will meet. This is one day after the Today Show. And I really believe that you would have to be somewhat of an idiot not to respond to what he was saying. George Bush was on Meet the Press yesterday, and they were asking him about war. George Bush said, well, he worked with the A-team and the B-team and the National Security Council, and Mr. John Paisley and all the top, Mr. Richard Pipes, all the top anti-Soviet people on which way to take or fight the Soviet Union. And yesterday he had toned down and said, I have a family and I have 7 grandchildren, and I don't want World War III. But the very next day, Mr. Gromyko was invited by Ronald Reagan, a complete switch. And of course, you read the stories of that. During the previous administrations, Gromyko had been coming for 3 decades to visit in Washington and was invited. His last meeting was Jimmy Carter, but he wanted to meet President Reagan and wasn't allowed to. But the very next day after that, really terrifying, at least terrifying to me to hear it. And I'm sure the people in Washington picked up that message and monitored, certainly NBC. That's the one particular station the White House controls just about better than any of the major networks. So the very next day, Gromyko said, yes, I will meet with Ronald Reagan. And also that same day on September the 10th, that's when the head of the Communist Party, Todor Zhukov, said he would not visit West Germany. That was just last Monday, and I mentioned that on the broadcast, but I'm putting in chronological order. Now, George Shultz, September the 10th, the same morning simultaneously that this statement about the war and the dangers of war was made, that very morning, he said in the newspaper, in the papers of September the 10th and 11th, George Shultz is ready to discuss the space arms freeze, that they must have talks. And then he clarified it. I don't think the situation is dangerous yet. In other words, when it's dangerous, you won't know it, because the Defense Department says they can start dropping the bombs. But he says that there will be this discussion of arms. That came just at the same time that the Soviet Union representative, Gromyko, was invited to come to see Ronald Reagan at the White House. And I think it's symbolic that it's not at Camp David out in the woods or somewhere like that, but in the White House of Washington, D.C., where Ronald Reagan will meet a Russian. Goodness knows what he'll do. He'll probably pee in his pants, but can you imagine when Gromyko walks through that door, what Nancy and Ronnie are doing? Anyway, the next day, September the 12th, invitation to Gromyko. Reagan is hoping to reassure Russia. And there were articles in the newspaper, Reagan will tell Gromyko the U.S. means no harm. Now, this doesn't mean, because Mr. Gromyko has been invited in the White House at this time, that there's going to be peace. Don't think that I'm relaxed about that. But it did take the top off the pressure cooker. That doesn't mean you're not going to get another pressure cooker an hour later. But there was a definite diffusing of the pressure that had built to the point between the Defense Department and Ronald Reagan, saying we can drop it first, and letting them know in his statement that what he thought was a joke was taken seriously. And it, as I said before, it wasn't a joke. It was a warning that he was warming up, and they knew it wasn't a joke. And that was the thing about the statement that sent the shivers around the world. Besides it not being funny, they understood that. But all of a sudden, Reagan is going to be hospitable, and he has invited the representative from the Soviet Union to come and see him. And asked about the meeting, he said these meetings wouldn't take place unless they were well prepared. The president said, "I think maybe the time has come that anything can perhaps get a better understanding between our two governments, and it should precede any resumption of dealings on the specifics." In other words, we'll get to the specifics later, but we better get our talks going now. And I think he's absolutely right that it was time to get the talks going, that they would show that they mean no harm, and at least meet eyeball to eyeball and see where they go from there. Now, the Washington Times, September the 12th, Reagan, Gromyko to confer on arms. They're not only to say hello, howdy do, how are you, but they are going to talk about weapons in this very quickly arranged meeting. The Times says Mr. Reagan was smiling, apparently pleased with the political coup of arranging a high-level meeting with one of the most powerful men in the Soviet Union. And Mr. Gromyko accepted the invitation because the Soviets believe Reagan will be reelected. It says, gone was the rhetoric of the evil empire that once applied to the Soviet government. The atmosphere was more of an extended olive branch from the Reagan administration to the Kremlin. The talk of how bad they were, what they did, knowing the evil empire speeches and so forth coming on top of the Korean airline disaster, knowing that we lied about that information, knowing that the Russians are mad, knowing the world is catching on in London, in Europe, the articles and books on the Korean airline coming out. Seymour Hersh is going to do a book on it. We have pushed ourselves against a wall, and Reagan only had one way to go. He would prefer to win the election, which he'll do anyway, being strong, because then he has a mandate to go on with the rhetoric, because being reelected, it means that the mandate is there. But he chose before the election to go ahead and meet with Mr. Gromyko. Gromyko said he would accept the invitation, and that's the way it is going. Another story, September the 12th, Reagan putting more emphasis on better relations with the Soviets. "We will try to go along," and Reagan is quoted telling members of the Congress, "as I've said many times, our policy against the unfair and wrong-headed policies of the grain embargo," he explained to them out in the farm area why he was sending 22 million metric tons of wheat and corn to the Soviet Union, because business is business, but he's spending up to the trillions of dollars on weapons to fight the Soviet Union. But all of a sudden, he also told them when he was out campaigning that the time has come, maybe the time has come, that anything that can perhaps get a better understanding between our two governments should precede the resumption of dealings. Anything that gets a better understanding. And Reagan concluded that there has to be a relationship of mutual trust before you can negotiate the arms reductions. There has to be this trust, which is quite an admission of Ronald Reagan, that you have to like each other before you agree not to kill each other. And then a story in the Wall Street Journal that the president, West German Chancellor Helmut Kohl, tried to insulate his country from the criticisms of the red baiting that he was doing before the East German representative was to come and see him. And they said Kohl's version of Ostpolitik under fire after East German and Bulgarian setbacks, that Mr. Kohl's government is under fire, that he was giving so much anti-Russian propaganda and spilling forth his opinions for the ethnic Germans expelled from Eastern European countries, bringing them to him and trying to force the East Germans and the Soviets to confront each other and melt the two Germanys together, he depended upon East Germany to bug Moscow, and they didn't bug Moscow. They pulled away from the meeting, and Helmut Kohl's work with Herr Kissinger and Mr. Lord Peter Carrington and Brzezinski and Fritz Kramer and the Henry Kissingers boomeranged, and that ended the topic of the meetings for the time being. Now, the following day, this is from the Los Angeles Herald and also the San Francisco Examiner on September the 13th. It was on the 10th that this statement was made by the Soviet Union on NBC. And on the 11th, Reagan said, "I will meet with Gromyko." The reason I'm going into such detail on this is that the explanations of the ordinary news media are so sickening, and they can't admit, not one of them, the feeling or the how scary it was to hear those things that were said on NBC in the way that they were said, that we are responding to a fact that world war is inevitable, that these billions are going to be burned. When I was doing this tape, I was thinking how I objectively handle the news all the time. And it was really the closest I ever felt to crying to realize that you have family. I have four children and friends, and I never really visualize flesh falling off and burning. I assume that there'll be a check and balance, that we will always be protected by somebody up there, that things can't really happen. Where you read in China during the Cultural Revolution of Mao, 10 million died. This year, 10 million in Africa will die of starvation and droughts that are going on now. There are thousands dying every day, freedom fighters fighting oppression. Why can't the bomb drop? These people are maniacs. They want it to drop. They are from other countries, emigres. We're going to bring 10,000 Orientals out of the Vietnam prisons that were part of the police force that had the tiger cages, the torturing. They belong to the early administrations. They're going to be released and brought to the United States, where Premier Key is busy trying to get ready for another war in Vietnam. 10,000 of those will be brought to the United States. So 2 days after I heard that, and as I say, the very next day, I didn't feel secure, but I felt better that Reagan, to have Gromyko meet him, was quite a change, because, as I say, he's going to be elected anyway, so that would give him the mandate for every weapon he wants to get meaner. Now, getting back to this article in the San Francisco Examiner, it was also in the Herald, Gromyko, who looks like the policymaker, THE is larger in big black letters, is ready for the Reagan summit. Now, wasn't this a quick summit? Reagan said, it isn't the head of the entire Soviet Union, but Mr. Gromyko may be the next head when there's another death. They're speaking about that. But the interesting thing about this article is that it says that when they meet later this month, Ronald Reagan will be the ninth U.S. president to encounter long-serving Mr. Andrei Gromyko. European diplomats say it's the first time that Gromyko will be acting as a policymaker in his own right. He's not just a messenger from the Kremlin. He makes the policies in the Kremlin. And this is the important thing. Mr. Gromyko, 75, was appointed the Soviet ambassador to Washington in 1943. That is the time when the Nazis began to go underground, and he was in Washington at that time in 43, which is significant. And he has been in on every significant Soviet-American meeting since Yalta in 1945. Now, Ronald Reagan was saying last week, and I had that on other broadcasts, that he will negate the Yalta agreement. He wants to push it back, that Germany has published their maps, printed maps of the German borders up to 1937, the boundaries of these different countries. Gromyko was at Yalta. He knows the law. He knows what happened at Yalta. And if you think that he's going to let Ronald Reagan or Mr. Helmut Kohl or anybody negate what was said at Yalta, hardly. He's going to be plenty hard on Ronald Reagan. And I say the Soviet Union has lost 20 million in World War II. They paid their dues. He was at Yalta. He outlasted Stalin, Khrushchev, Brezhnev, and Dropov. He was named foreign minister by Khrushchev in 1957. He has genuine power. He has the background and knowledge. So when Mr. Andrei Gromyko walks through the door of the White House to meet the most vicious president since Herbert Hoover, the most anti-Soviet, the one who has bankrupted this country with debts and the rhetoric and the red baiting that has been instigated between him and his churches, this is no patsy that walks through those doors September the 28th. And that is very significant. Now, the Washington Times, December 13th, had a story by Georgie Ann Geyer, G-E-Y-E-R. I recommend that those of you that don't have it, subscribe to Reverend Moon's paper. I didn't put it on the sheet that goes with this, but you can find it at your libraries or call. You're really going to get your money's worth if you read the Washington Times. I've taken it since the day it started. I learn a lot from it, just like they reproduced that speech on NBC by the Soviet official. but they also have very interesting slanted stories that direct you if you're not smart enough to know the difference, but are very interesting. Now, Georgianne writes for them about once a week and has a column. This was just before Gromyko. It came out the day after Gromyko was welcome in the White House, but was written probably a few days before. And this article is on discernible changes in the Eastern European bloc. And the article is about big black letters, the astonishing events of the last 2 weeks with the Eastern bloc leader after Eastern bloc. That means the German and the Bulgarian that wouldn't go to West Germany. Was forced by a nervous Moscow to cancel state visits to the West, illustrates clearly the failing hand of Soviet controls over these countries. I ask you, is the Soviet Union failing in their control when they get an invitation into the White House that's more important than the head of the Communist Party going for 3 days to West Germany? When we said we wouldn't have summit conferences until we were prepared, and now we say, come, the UN is meeting in the end of September. You're welcome. You come and see us. They want to tell you that Russia is falling apart, that Moscow is weak, that we should keep up the rhetoric. And they encourage us for something that, in fact, doesn't happen. Just as the CIA said, the Cubans hate Fidel Castro. If we invade the Bay of Pigs, we'll surely take the whole place. All we have to do is land on the island and we will be welcome. We weren't welcome. Hitler thought the Russians are subjected to terrible lifestyles. In fact, William Rusher was on the Today Show this morning talking about their program in the Soviet Union. He said that's not a legitimate country, as if the Tsar was elected. They haven't had an election in 70 years. That the head of the country was taken in a shipped box. That was Lenin from Switzerland to become head of the country. He said they've never had an election. And William Rusher, of course, is related to William Buckley and is he publishes the National Review for William Buckley, the Knight of Malta, the Vatican representative of the literary elite, the chic, so-called middle. He's right-wing, but he tries to be cutesy, you know, William Buckley. And Rusher was on talking about that. But when Germany went to the borders of Russia and thought that they would all run and welcome them, 20 million died. If it was an unelected government, they certainly chose to preserve that government. And we have the illusion through these kinds of articles that they are weak. And we make ourselves look like fools and then have to bow down later to having discussions and realize where our place is in the world and how unimportant in the whole world we are, unless we just want to blow the whole thing up and not accept that we're only one among a lot of people. Now, September the 14th, there followed another story. The report on the Soviet Union is postponed. At the time that Ronald Reagan said he would meet with Mr. Gromyko, they said, well, Congress is to get a report on the arms agreements, that they broke the arms agreement violations. Now, the excuse for this, the Soviet Union has responded that Caspar Weinberger is saying they broke the agreement so that we have an excuse to break the agreement for the Star War contract, a very dangerous precedent that was published in the Soviet Union on why we're charging with this. But Ronald Reagan had asked his Congress to come up with a report giving him an out on why we don't have a dialogue. So now all of a sudden the arms control violations are going to be put under the table. Reagan, they said, well, will that insult Mr. Gromyko if that comes out at the same time you're trying to be hospitable? And he said, well, that has nothing to do with me. The Congress was ordered to do that. That's the Congress's business. Well, Congress is red-baiting all the time and giving contracts for these weapons. Every member of Congress is as guilty, not every member, but most of them are as guilty as Ronald Reagan. So now we've backed down on the report. He said, of course, the report will come simultaneously. So Reagan has backed down on the fact, yes, I will meet Gromyko. He has backed down and said, yes, we will have arms talk. Now he has backed down and said, we will downplay the violations. And Secretary of State George Shultz and his principal spokesman recently downplayed the report by Reagan's General Advisory Committee charging the Soviet Union with 18 violations of arms treaties. Shultz told the NBC interviewer that although there seemed to be direct violations, most of the alleged treaty breaches concerned cases where Moscow legitimately had exploited loopholes in the SALT II treaty. So there is Mr. Shultz coming down a little bit. And then the story of Mondale being invited by the Soviet Union and Mr. Gromyko before Ronald Reagan had contacted him, before that horrendous last Monday speech, that not a speech, but interview that I heard on television and others of you might have heard. And Mondale said that he was approached unofficially last week by the Soviet academician about the possibility of a meeting with Gromyko. He said, remember that the president, there's only one president of the United States, you'll meet with the president. But he said that they had asked him to meet with them first. And I think it's interesting that while Ronald Reagan has to take the position, now he's invited Mr. Gromyko into the White House, a man who was at the Yalta agreements when Ronald Reagan was making movies out here with Errol Flynn from the Gestapo, from the German Nazi Gestapo, 1942, 1940, co-starring with Gestapo chief with all their interconnecting and common friends from the Nazi Gestapo. Ronald Reagan was making his movies and Gromyko was at Yalta. And that's very important, 1945, those meetings that they had. So Mondale will meet first, symbolically. I think that's interesting that even though he's a candidate, he's a representative of the United States who said, if I were president, the very first day I would meet with the Soviet Union and scale down this war talk that's going on. Now, the Wall Street Journal can't give the account that I've given to you. They have to keep the image of the president going. They depend upon Ronald Reagan being reelected. And the Wall Street Journal carries a story that Gromyko talks to give Reagan a political boost. It will give Reagan a political boost because it will make him look like he is a man of peace. He will talk with Mr. Gromyko. He will make all the weapons. He wants to continue making the weapon contracts. But they can turn it into a plus that here is a statesman who's not afraid to talk. And the reason I've gone into such detail on the chronology of these events with you is that we were very, very close and still are to the brink. Now, Reagan wasn't the only one who changed faces, and I'll only have time for a little bit on this subject. But did you notice a difference in the tone on the Pope? When the Pope went to Canada, when he first started out, there were a lot of articles of what was going on at home in the Vatican, how they were taking on various priests for their political interests in South America and Central America. One story in the New York Times, August the 20th, Brazilian faces a Vatican inquiry over his support for social activism. Leonardo Boff, a Franciscan friar, one of the leading exponents of radical interpretation of Christian thinking, works with priests and nuns, thousands of them involved with working with the poor. And he is to be taken before the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith. He was in Rome, not allowed counsel, not given specific charges, everything done in secret to stop him from working with the poor. Also, a split in El Salvador, New York Times, September 8th. Split feared in El Salvador on church's social role, the Vatican's criticism of liberation theology. You hear it everywhere that the clerics are organizing peasants, slum dwellers, and helping people in their communities to become self-sufficient. Thousands have been killed by the death squads, and five priests are working down there, particularly with the rebels, invoking the name of Archbishop Romero, who was shot down on the orders of Mr. Dobison, and our CIA funds gunning down Catholic priests if they interfere with the potential for slavery and exploitation that's been going on for years. And besides Brazil and El Salvador, New York Times, September the 4th, Vatican sets the limits on liberation theology in Nicaragua. Growing tension between the Vatican and leftist clerics in Latin America, particularly in Nicaragua. Now, all over the world, in the Philippines and so forth, this Auschwitz Pope, the I.G. Farben Pope, has been hammering away, don't you interfere in the social life. And all of a sudden, simultaneously with the day that Ronald Reagan catches the light, which is September the 11th in Washington, D.C., the Pope in Canada all of a sudden changes his speeches. And he is very close to the Indians. He is giving the industrialists and the business people hell. And he angered them. He's talking to the poor, the fishing fleet. He's talking to the people. Pope seeks the end of joblessness. How do you get the end of joblessness when the production, the means of production, particularly in South and Central America, in the hands of 14 people from an entire country, or where J. Peter Grace ran the whole country of Peru with the Nazi death squads, or Klaus Barbie and the Vatican. All of a sudden, the Pope toned down simultaneously with Ronald Reagan. He toned his speeches. He went into Canada. He told them that Christ was an Indian, and he wanted to see the Indians. Now, there was a, if you collect the articles in chronological order between the speeches of the Pope and Ronald Reagan this past week as compared up to that time, there was a distinct difference in tone, and both of them are getting advice from the same people. There isn't any more space on this tape, so I'll have to stop now and continue. I have some more on the Pope and the CIA, and we'll probably begin with that next week. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. And you take care of yourself. I'll be back with you next week.